coupled with the tension about me, caused her to throw him out the house.
"So where is your father now?" Dr. Spencer asked.
"He lives in North Carolina. He left home and went back to his hometown, took over my grandfather's auto shop. He always loved working with his hands and fixing up old cars."
"So that was his career all along?"
"No," I replied. "My father was a computer programmer in Florida. I guess he just wanted a fresh start altogether, and my grandfather died shortly after he returned home. The business was there, and he just took it over and learned whatever it was he didn't already know."
"Do you still keep in contact with your father?"
That was a difficult question for me to answer.
"Yes and no."
"Meaning?"
"He writes me letters, but I never answer them."
Dr. Spencer sat up on the edge of her seat. "Why don't you respond to them?"
"Because I'm torn. My mother is very dominant and opinionated. If I were to have a father-daughter relationship with him, she would view that as a sign of betrayal."
"So your mother is more important to you than your father?" I sat there for a moment, pondering the question.
"I can't really say that's it. My mother has been there for me more than my father."
"But has that been by choice or circumstance?"
I shrugged.
"A little of both. If he really wanted to see me, he could find me. He has my address." I could feel an anxiety attack coming on, and apparently so could Dr. Spencer.
"Let's not dwell on that right now," she said. "However, in the future, you might want to consider contacting your father. You may be able to bring some closure to whatever it is that's troubling you."
"I thought about going to see him," I said honestly. "But I really don't know what I could possibly say to him at this point, being that I've ignored him for so long."
"Are his letters written in a way that makes him seem bitter or just anxious to be a part of your life?"
"He wants to be a part of my life. My father has never been mean to me. Not ever."
We continued to talk for another 30 minutes. I felt a little better when I left, but far from sane. What if there really was another person living inside of me?
Chapter 13. Jude.
That fucking did it. Those bitches! Okay, if that's the way they wanted to play it, so be it. If one of us was going somewhere, it sure as shit wasn't gonna be me. We were driving home from the psycho bitch's office when I made Joan vanish. Fuck her. I decided to stop by the mall to do some shopping. Let her figure the shit out when her credit card bill came in. I had a secret place where I hid clothes I purchased behind her back. I rarely did it, but I deserved a shopping spree after that bullshit she was talking in the doctor's office. Things were getting out of hand. People were getting into my business that didn't belong in it, and if Joan even thought about reaching out to dearest daddy, I planned to put a stop to that shit immediately. I stopped by Greenbrier Mall, always a good place to find Dick. Even though it was a Monday, there were still quite a few people out shopping, or at least window shopping. I found 2 Horfits in one store and a pair of shoes to match each one in another store. Then I got a salted pretzel and some lemonade from a vendor. I sat on a bench and tried to calm down. It wasn't happening. On my way home, I passed a mattress store. As usual, the parking lot was abandoned. I'd always wondered how mattress stores could stay in business because they were the only stores I knew of that always had empty parking lots. There were usually 1 or 2 cars, and those belonged to the employees. I decided to stop, though, and fuck with whomever was working that day. Why not? There was nothing to do at home. I was going to pretend like I planned to purchase the most expensive mattress set in the store, make the person fill out a bunch of fake paperwork, and then roll out. I walked in and didn't see a soul.
"Hello?
Anyone here?"
I yelled out. There was no response.
"Hey, you taking a dump or something?"
I laughed at the prospect. Some senior citizen dude who hadn't saved up enough money for retirement, sitting on the throne in the back embarrassed because I had caught him taking a shit. I decided to wait and started checking out the selections. They had some low-end sets. I tried a couple of them out and quickly realized the scam they were running. Game always recognized game, The lower-priced mattress sets were so hard and uncomfortable that no one in their right mind would want to sleep on them. Thus, they would be forced, if desperate and not feeling like going someplace else, to pay more money for something better. Finally, I heard someone emerging from the back. I faced the storeroom door and waited for a 190-year-old man to come out. Much to my astonishment, this sexy-ass motherfucker came out instead. "Sorry," he said. "I didn't hear you come in. I was in the back looking for a product for a customer." I scanned the store. "A customer? Is said customer invisible?" He laughed. "No, she's on the phone. Give me a second." I watched him take a seat at the cheap stainless steel desk and pick up the phone. "Sorry for the delay, Miss Gray. We don't have it in stock right now, but if you like, I can special order it for you." I smirked. How in the hell could an item be out of stock when they never had more than two people in the store at a time? I eyed him carefully as he concluded his call. He was about 6'2", with skin the color of dark fudge, had almond-shaped dark eyes, and looked like he could hold his own in a bench-pressing contest. He hung up the phone and said, "Sorry, how may I help you?" "That's the third time you've said sorry in the past 2 minutes. What's there to be sorry for? You're just doing your job." He shrugged. "True, but my mother raised me to be a gentleman." "Good for her." I fingered one of the more luxurious sets, a king-sized one. "How much is this?" I could have read the tag, but I wanted him to come over to assist me so I could peep out his ass and see if I could spot a hump in front of his pants. He fell for it, came over, and read the tag that I was perfectly capable of reading. "This set is $2,700.
$2,700? Does it fuck the people sleeping on it for that price?"
He was taken aback.
"Sorry?"
"There you go with sorry again." I rolled my eyes. "Look, Jerry," I said, reading his name badge, "don't get this twisted, but how often does someone really come in here and pay that kind of money for a mattress set? Something to sleep on?"
"I'll admit it happens sporadically, but it does happen. Most of the sets we sell go for anywhere between $300 and $800. Is that the price range you were looking for?"
I stood there, debating about whether or not to go through with my original plan or switch it up. I glanced at the door. What would happen if we locked the door and tried out the $2,700 set? He blushed.
"Excuse me?"
"You heard me."
"Try it out how?"
"By fucking on it. How else?" He was apprehensive.
"Are you serious? You must be kidding."
"No, not at all." I reached over, grabbed his tie, and jerked him toward me. "What's wrong? You don't believe women are capable of going after what or who they want? Men do it all the time." He chuckled.
"True, but most men aren't even brave enough to ask someone to fuck them in the middle of a store in broad daylight."
"Well, that's their problem." I ran my tongue across his cheek like an animal marking my territory. "So how about it?" He tried to push me away.
"Miss, I don't even know you."
He held up his left hand to show me his ring. "Besides, I'm married and extremely faithful." I giggled. "All men are dogs. Some of them just don't know it until you educate them." "What does it mean to be extremely faithful?"
"It means I don't even look at other women," he replied.
I let him go and backed away, climbing up on the mattress set and pulling my top over my head. When I reached behind me and started unclasping my bra, I said, "So I guess you won't look at my tits then." He not only was looking, he was staring. I bet his wife had carried 3 or 4 kids and had tits hanging down to her belly button. My tatas were perked. I lifted the side of my skirt, reached beneath the elastic of my panties, and started fingering myself. "Jerry, you know you want this pussy. Come on and get some." He faltered before stating, "There is something seriously wrong with you." "No, there is something seriously wrong with you if you don't take advantage of the situation, because it will never come your way again." He was beginning to turn me off, but I just loved a challenge, and I wasn't about to give up until I got the dick. Besides,
Joan deserved to be reprimanded and shown who was controlling things. I lay down in the middle of the bed, pulled my fingers out my panties, and started licking them. Damn, I taste so good. You sure you don't want to taste? It was obvious he was thinking about taking advantage of the opportunity. He was looking back and forth between me and the parking lot.
Oh, come on, Jerry, I said.
No one is going to come in here shopping at this time on a Monday evening. People are stressing over their first day back at work, thinking about what they did over the weekend and wondering why it had to end. Then he did it. He asked me a stupid fucking question. Did my wife send you? I laughed.
No, I don't know the bitch.
She's always talking about not trusting me. How do I know you're not one of those, what do they call them? Decoys that they have on talk shows all the time. I shook my head.
Jerry, you need to get a life. You're a sexy man. I'm a sex fiend. And I want to fuck you. Right here, right now.
It's just that simple. I pointed at the door. Lock it. He didn't utter a word. Just did as he was instructed. When the door was secure, he came back over to the bed and asked, Now what?
Take off your clothes.
All of them?
No, the pants will do. I just want some dick.
He trembled as he undid his belt and kicked off his shoes.
This is absolutely insane. I can't believe I'm doing this.
Believe it, Cherry. You're doing it. You're about to fuck a complete stranger at your job.
Don't worry. Your secret is safe with me.
So, what's your name anyway? He asked as he climbed on the bed beside me. I smacked my lips.
I don't have a name, Jerry, but if you insist on calling me something, just call me whore.
I think I'd like that.
You want me to call you whore?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Look, are you sure you're clean?
He started looking me up and down like he was doing an examination.
I don't have a condom.
Jerry, either we're gonna shit or get off the pot. Know what I'm saying? I asked.
I don't believe in condoms. When it's my time, it's my time.
But for the record, yes, I am clean. I decided there had been enough talking. I felt like a man trying to persuade a virgin to do it for the first time.
Jerry, just shut the hell up, I yelled at him. Now give me my dick.
I dominated Jerry for the rest of the evening. It was after closing time when I left the mattress shop, and not a single person came up to the door. The phone only rang twice. Before it was over, said and done, Jerry had fucked me 6 ways from Sunday. We fucked on top of 4 different mattress sets. I tied him to a brass bed and wore him out on top of a pillow top set, but my knees kept sinking into it too much. For the record, the cheapest set was the best for rough riding. All of that release of sexual tension was for my naught. My anger started all over again when I returned to the apartment, and that Mason bastard had left a note for Joan taped to the door. He wanted to know if she would consider going out with him that Saturday. Ironically, he wanted her to go to a wedding with him. I snickered. Could it be the same wedding Joan had promised to attend with Darnetta? Either way, Joan was not about to accept his invite. I made sure of that by ripping up the note. However, if it did come to pass that it was one and same event, I was determined to turn that motherfucker out.
Chapter 14. Jonquinette.
I didn't remember a thing after I left Dr. Spencer's office. I also overslept for the 2nd day in a row. The scent was there again when I took a shower. What was truly sad about the entire thing was that I was getting used to the same thing happening to me over and over again. That didn't make it any less frightening, though. I showed up at the office an hour late. There was no way I was calling in 2 days in a row. I might have found myself on the unemployment line. The place was already jumping. Thank goodness business had picked back up, or we all would have had hell to pay. Less than 2 minutes after I sat down at my desk, Darnetta was poking her head in my doorway.
What's up, Joan?
Nothing, I just got here. I started shuffling some of the papers around. I really didn't feel like having a long, drawn-out discussion that day. I have a ton of things to catch up on.
Are you okay?
She asked.
I heard you called in yesterday.
I'm fine. I was just a little under the weather.
Yeah. The rapid temperature changes have been wild lately. Most of my family is sick.
Well, whatever I had only lasted a day. I started scribbling on a pad, hoping she would take the hint and leave.
So, you busy today?
Darnetta shrugged her shoulders.
You know me. I work at my own pace, so I won't wear myself out.
We both laughed. She came closer to my desk.
Actually, I just came by to remind you about the wedding this Saturday. There's no way I'm letting you back out.
I felt my heart flutter. I was not looking forward to being around a bunch of strangers. I wouldn't dream of backing out, I said.
Good. We're gonna have a ball.
I sat my pen down. Darnetta, I hate to be rude, but I really have to take care of some of this stuff. She flicked her hand in my direction.
Hey, I hear you, girl. I'm going to get back to my desk before Big Brother comes looking for me.
Thanks for the reminder.
I will be reminding you the rest of the week, she said. Have you decided what you're going to wear?
I shook my head. No, I haven't a clue. I'll come up with something. Darnetta eyed me uncomfortably.
Might I make a suggestion? Why don't you try something a little more provocative than usual? You're a beautiful woman. You should emphasize it more.
I couldn't come up with a response that made sense to me, so I didn't respond at all.
I'll catch you later, Joan, Darnetta said as she left.
The amount of work that had piled up on my desk during one day of absence was unbelievable. It was so bad that I ended up taking some work home with me. That wasn't a problem, since I had no plans anyway. Not that I ever did. There was a note on my door. It was Mason asking if I had made up my mind. I had no idea what he was talking about. I started to go knock on his door, but decided against it. I had nothing to offer him. It was ironic. I had finally found a man that I was somewhat interested in, at least I wanted to get to know him better, and I was too messed up in the head to even deal with the situation. It had been so long since I masturbated, yet that night I found myself lying in bed fantasizing about Mason as I caressed my breast and squeezed my thighs around the towel placed between my legs to create friction on my clit. I imagined Mason making passionate love to me.
Chapter 15. Junquenette. Darnetta showed up at my apartment 15 minutes early. I was ready, but I didn't have my hair done. I let her in and ran into the bathroom to throw it up in my habitual bun.
Joan, do you need some help?
Darnetta yelled from the living room.
No, I'm fine.
I glimpsed in the mirror and thought about applying some makeup. Then I thought better of it. I wasn't trying to meet anyone, so why try to enhance my appearance? I just smeared some lip gloss across my lips so they wouldn't chap and told Darnetta that I was ready to go. When we got to the church, it was packed. I had never been to that particular church, but I had heard a lot about it. Apparently, it was one of the biggest congregations in the city. At least half of them must have been present, which led me to believe that the groom was very active in the church. Darnetta, thanks for inviting me, I said after we were seated in a pew.
No problem. Thank you for coming. Since Logan's in the wedding, I didn't want to sit out here by myself.
The processional music started, and I was dazed when the groom and best man walked out from the pastor's study and took their places at the altar. Mason was the best man. I exhaled a deep breath, and Darnetta stared at me.
Something wrong?
No, it's just funny because the best man just moved into my building a little while ago.
Oh, you mean Mason?
You know him?
I didn't until last night. I met him at the rehearsal dinner. Girl, he's too fine and nice as hell. You need to jump on him.
I blushed. No, he's just a neighbor, but I hope he and I can become good friends.
Friends? Darnetta asked. You need to be friends and lovers. I asked him if he had a woman last night, and he said no. You better snatch him up before somebody else does.
I shifted uncomfortably in my seat. I'm not really looking for a man right now. Work is keeping me pretty busy.
Forget that stupid job. Besides, it can't keep you warm at night or blow your back out. Know what I'm saying?
Darnetta laughed, and I faked a smile. We both got quiet as the rest of the wedding party marched in front from the back of the church. The wedding ceremony was beautiful. When the minister pronounced the man and wife, I almost cried. The couple was extremely cute together.
Smitty and Robin had met in college and dated on and off for more than 6 years before deciding to tie the knot. At the reception afterward, many people stood to toast them and reflect on funny times the two of them had been through. I had trouble hearing some of them because Darnetta was too busy acting jealous about the bridesmaid that Logan had to escort throughout the entire evening. I tried to tell her that it was no big deal. I had never had a man, and even I knew that. He was simply doing what he was supposed to do, escorting the woman down the aisle and into the reception as well as sitting beside her at the head table. When they had the first dance and the wedding party joined in, I could feel the steam emitting off Darnetta when Logan had his arm dangling from the woman's waist. The caterer had it going on. The food was delicious. They served Gulf shrimp cocktail, blue crab claws, lobster bisque, smoked salmon, antipasto, shrimp and scallop scampi, and veal chops. I was so stuffed that I thought I would burst out of my dress by the time they served the cake, which was incredible as well. Mason had spotted me during the ceremony. I lowered my eyes in shame. Why, I didn't know. I just felt embarrassed to run into him there. During the greeting line on the way out of the church, I paused just long enough to shake his hand. He pulled it up to his mouth and kissed it gently. Then he leaned in closer to me and whispered, "We'll talk at the reception." The reception was more than halfway over, and he hadn't said a word to me. I found myself wondering if he had a woman present after all. The maid of honor, who he had to escort, was not eye-catching at all, but that didn't mean she lacked a great personality. Darnetta was elated when Logan finally rescued her from the table where we were seated.
"Logan, you remember John Quinetta that works with me?"
Darnetta stated, even though I had never met the man before. I had only heard about him day in and day out and seen his picture. "No, I don't recall having met," he replied. "But it sure is a pleasure." I stood up and shook his hand. "It's nice to meet you, Logan. I've heard so much about you." Logan was extremely attractive and seemed nice enough. Darnetta was a lucky girl. "Gianquinetta, you don't mind if I steal Darnetta away for a dance, do you?" he asked. "I won't keep her for long." "No, take your time," I said. "She's wanted to dance with you all evening." I lied. She really had wanted to wring his neck all evening. As they walked away, I sat back down at the table and scanned the room searching for Mason. After spotting the maid of honor among a group of women on the dance floor getting their boogie on together in their stocking feet, I imagined him off in a quiet corner flirting with one of the many gorgeous women in attendance. I jumped when I felt a hand on my shoulder. Mason chuckled and took Darnetta's unoccupied seat next to me. "I'm sorry, Gianquinette. I didn't mean to startle you." I laughed timidly. "I'm okay." We sat there in silence for a moment while we both gathered our thoughts. "Nice wedding," I said finally. "I was surprised to see you here." "Really?" he asked with an expression of bewilderment on his face. "I don't know why. After all, I did invite you. I'm just sorry you never responded to my note." "Your note? You must be confused." He smirked and shook his head. "I'm not confused at all. You mean to tell me that you didn't get the note I stuck on your door earlier this week asking you to be my date?" I was at a loss for words and didn't want to panic. It could have been blown away or some bad kid could have taken it off the door. I didn't want to think the worst. "Mason, I didn't receive your note. Thanks for the invitation, though." He played with the stem of Darnetta's champagne glass. "Can I ask you something?" "Sure." "If you had gotten it, would you have said yes?" "No." He sighed deeply. "That's disappointing. I had hoped that you would." "I didn't mean it like that," I said, trying to correct myself and spare his feelings. "Darnetta had asked me to come with her first, and I promised that I would. She and I worked together, and I never would have heard the end of it if I backed out on her." He seemed reassured. "Good, I understand." "So you would have said yes if it weren't for that?" he asked, continuing to probe. "Absolutely." That wasn't true, but it didn't matter at that moment. I would have been too nervous to go out on a date with Mason, especially to a wedding. The band slowed the music down, and the group of women on the dance floor took their seats, leaving only couples who embraced each other intimately.
Jonquinette, may I have this dance? Mason asked, extending his hand to me. I had never danced with a man before, not ever. But something was different. I really liked Mason. I would like that, I said, taking his hand and allowing him to lead me to the dance floor. When he placed his hands on my waist, I shivered. I have to warn you, I'm not a very good dancer. He grinned. There's nothing to it. Just go with the music. We danced to Ribbon in the Sky, one of my all-time favorite songs. Mason placed his cheek on mine, and I almost lost it. It felt so wonderful. I could feel his dick pressing up against me, and that felt wonderful also. I had never experienced even that before. We remained on the dance floor for 3 songs. Then Smitty, the groom, came over and tapped Mason on the shoulder. Mason, can I holler at you for a few before Robin and I leave for the honeymoon? Mason looked torn but said, sure, man. By the way, this is Jonquinette. Jonquinette, this is Smitty. We shook hands. Jonquinette as in your neighbor? Smitty asked Mason. One and the same, Mason replied. Oh, so she ended up at the wedding anyway. Smitty eyed me up and down. I can see why Mason is so taken with you. I was blushing horribly. Mason had obviously been talking about me to at least one of his friends. I was flattered beyond comprehension. Thank you. I managed to get out of my mouth somehow. I won't keep him long, Smitty said. I just need Mason to hold down the fort for me while I'm gone, so we need to go over a few things. Where are you honeymooning? I asked. The Caymans, Smitty said. Robin and I have always wanted to have an escapade over there. Before I knew it, Mason pulled me to him and brushed his lips across mine. I'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. I watched them walk outside, and then I headed for the ladies' room to pull myself together. That kiss had set my insides on fire. Jude. I sat in the bathroom stall pissed off. Joan was actually considering dating that fool. I could tell that any day she would be giving up the draws. I couldn't and wouldn't tolerate it. Something drastic had to be done. I had hoped, if it did turn out to be the same wedding, that Mason would have been there with some other bitch so Joan could see he was just another player after a quick lay. But no, he had to be there alone and all up on her like her pussy was embedded with gold. I came out of the stall and glanced in the mirror as I washed my hands. What to do? What to do? I asked my reflection. Then my question was answered when 2 of the bridesmaids walked in talking about my next victim. Damn, that Logan sure is fine, one of them said. Yeah, but you can forget it, the other one replied. He's been dating that Darnetta chick for ages. That don't mean he don't fool around. He was flirting with me at the rehearsal last night, and he was feeling me, I could tell. I pretended to be fixing my hair so I could hang back long enough to hear their conversation. Cassie, he wasn't feeling you. Alicia, look ho. I know when a man is feeling me, and I'm telling you, if I wanted some, I could get it. That may be true because I don't know how many men that would turn down free sex. But after you do him, then what? He goes right back to Darnetta and leaves your ass out. I'm not trying to fall in love with Logan. I'm just curious, that's all. Alicia cleared her throat and looked in my direction. I turned at them and grinned. You ladies have a good evening. When I was walking out the bathroom door, I heard Alicia ask Cassie, how do you know that's not one of Darnetta's girls or something, talking about that man like that? I laughed. That's what the bitches deserved. They needed some gossip etiquette training. You never spread your dirt in front of other people because you never know who knows who. Ironically, I passed Darnetta as she was headed into the very same bathroom.
Joan, there you are. I was looking for you. How are things going with Mason? I saw you on the dance floor getting your freak on.
That Darnetta trick could get on my nerves at times with her babbling, but all in all, she was cool. At least she had a life. I should have felt guilty for what I was contemplating.
Not...
Mason and I are getting along just fine, I responded. He had to go talk to Smitty about some things, but we'll be back on the dance floor getting our freaks on again soon. Darnetta giggled.
Good for you, girl. I'm glad to see that you're loosening up.
She slapped me on the shoulder. Let me get in here before I pee on myself. I watched her go into the ladies' room, and then I went on a hunt. The window of opportunity was a small one. I had to make it work. I spotted Logan by the back exit door smoking a cigarette. Another brother was standing there for a second, but he put his cigarette out and walked away. The reception was being held at a conference center, so in addition to the large room where the gathering was actually held, there were numerous smaller rooms. I walked up to Logan, took his hand, and pulled him toward one. "Jean-Quinette, what's going on?" he asked, confused. "Just come with me," I instructed. "Did Darnetta send you to get me? Is she all right?"
"Darnetta's fine. Just come."
I tried a couple of doorknobs until I found one that was unlocked and pulled Logan inside. It was empty except for two tables, a few scattered chairs, and a helium tank that had been used to blow up the balloons for the reception.
"Jean-Quinette, what's going on?" he asked for the second time.
"Just come," I said for the third time. "That's all I want you to do. Just come." He finally got the hint.
"I'm sorry, but I don't know you like that. Besides, I'm dating Darnetta, you know that."
This fool was determined to play hard to get. No man could resist me, and he was an idiot for even trying. I pushed him on a table and locked the door. "Listen to me, Logan. I'm quite aware that you're dating Darnetta. I'm also quite aware that you're a man. All men love pussy. At least real men do." I lowered his tuxedo jacket off his shoulders just enough to constrict his arm movement, and then I started undoing his cummerbund.
"You love pussy, Logan?"
"Yes, but..." I put my fingers to his lips, then shut the hell up. I ran my fingers through his curly brown hair with one hand while I caressed his dick through his pants with the other.
"You have that exotic look that I adore. Are you from an island or something?"
"No, I'm from right here in Atlanta. My mama has some Cherokee in her, though."
"Well, all I can say is that you're so fine that I couldn't leave here tonight without feeling your dick inside me." I knew I had his ass then. Men suck up compliments and can't get enough of them.
"Damn," he exclaimed. "I thought you were shy. That's what Darnetta said."
"Darnetta doesn't know a damn thing about me except what she sees at work. Women who are true dick connoisseurs like me don't have to advertise it. We keep our business private. That's why you never have to worry about anything that transpires within these walls leaving here." I hooked my foot around a chair and pulled it closer so I could sit down. Then I undid the clasp on his pants and yanked his zipper. Time was of essence, so I plunged right in the second I had his dick in clear view. It was a scrumptious dick, too. Someone came and knocked at the door. We both fell silent until we heard footsteps walking away down the hall. Logan whispered, "Oh no, we have to come to our senses." I glanced up at him and said, "Sense this." Then I deep-throated him again. He was right, though. My purpose was more about self-preservation than sex. So I pushed him back until he lay flat on the table, slipped off my panties, and mounted him. I rode him fast and quick for a few minutes, gathered my things together, and headed for the door. Logan looked dumbfounded. "What was that all about?" I turned around. "Just something I wanted, and I always get what I want." He shook his head in dismay. "Are you going to tell Darnetta?" I smirked. "Why would I do that?"
"Just tell Darnetta and Mason that I fell ill and decided to catch a cab home. I've had enough of this event to last me a lifetime." I walked out of the room, found the rear exit, and jetted. After getting settled in the back of the cab that I flagged down, I couldn't help but laugh. Let Joan try to get closer to Mason. I already had my game in order.
Chapter 16. Jean-Quinette. I woke up lying in the middle of my living room floor. My head was splitting from a migraine, and I was wearing only a bra and panties. I didn't remember anything, leaving the wedding, the ride home, nothing. I wondered if I had done something crazy in front of Darnetta. Heaven forbid I had done something ridiculous in front of Mason. I debated about calling Darnetta to make sure she'd gotten home okay, and to snoop around about what had happened. Then I glanced at the clock and realized it was after 2 o'clock in the morning. I wouldn't call anyone's house that late, not in a million years.
I decided to go back to bed and deal with whatever happened in the morning. I had just crawled under my covers when a knock came at the door. Startled, I sat up in the bed and listened to see if I was imagining things. Another knock came, this time louder. I got up, threw on a robe, and went to look out the peephole. Oh, no, it was a mason. He must have heard me moving around because he said, "Junquenette, I know you're home. Can we talk?" I spoke softly through the door. "Mason, it's really late. Can we do this tomorrow?" "I just wanted to make sure that you're okay. Logan said you weren't feeling well, and that's why you left the wedding so suddenly." "Logan? What in the world did Logan have to do with anything? Other than a brief introduction, I hadn't spoken 5 words to him." "I do have a migraine, but I'll be fine." "You sure?" "Yes, positive." "Have a good night." I glanced through the peephole again and noticed he was still standing there, staring at my door. He took a deep breath, started to walk away, and then hesitated. "Junquenette, can you just open the door for 1 second? I'd feel a lot better if I could just see you. It'll give me peace of mind." I decided there was nothing to lose. After fingering my hair and straightening up my robe, I inched the door open. "See, I'm fine, Mason." He chuckled. "It would help me out if I could see more than your eyeballs." I opened the door completely. "Is this better?" He eyed me up and down, and I tightened my robe around my chest. "Definitely better." "Well, you look okay," he said. He touched my forehead with his palm. "No fever. Are you sure you don't need to see a doctor?" "I'm sure. It was a long day, and I just overdid it some. I have a history of anemia, so my iron is probably low. I forgot to take my tablet earlier." Mason took me completely off guard by grabbing me into his arms and kissing me. He slipped his tongue into my mouth, and at first I didn't know how to react. Then something came alive inside me, and I responded. It was the first time I had truly kissed a man, and it felt great. He was gentle yet powerful, and his arms around my waist made me feel completely at ease. For once, I wasn't nervous. He pushed me backward into my apartment and against the wall as the intensity of our kiss grew. It lasted for a good 5 minutes until... He grabbed my left breast and I freaked out. I maneuvered myself away from him. "I'm sorry, Mason, I can't do this." He grinned at me and said, "I didn't mean to rush you. We can take our time getting to know each other." I grinned back at him. "I'd like that. I'd like that very much. So how about we start with a real date? Not one where we just happen to end up in the same place, but one where we actually leave here together and come back here together." "That sounds original." We both laughed. "Dinner, tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. How does that sound?" "Like a winning proposition." Mason kissed me on the forehead. "Good night." "Good night." I climbed back into bed and fell asleep dreaming about Mason. Jude. Bitch! Chapter 17, November 1994, 10th grade, Pembroke Pines, Florida. Henry Pierce paced the kitchen floor, waiting for his wife to come back inside from the garage. Meredith came in carrying a large turkey that she had retrieved from the chest freezer. "This turkey's a little small, but I think we'll make do," she said. "How many people do we have coming over for Thanksgiving dinner?" Henry asked.
"About a dozen."
Henry sighed and sat down at the table. "Why is it that everyone always gathers at our house for holiday dinners? Don't they ever entertain at their homes?"
"Henry, that's not fair. You know my family members entertain from time to time. It's just that we live in the most central location, and that makes it easier for everyone to get together."
Henry smirked. "If you say so, but I think it has more to do with us footing the grocery bill than anything else." Meredith didn't comment. They both knew it was a true statement. While Meredith tried to act as if she, quote-unquote, came from money, that couldn't have been further from the truth. She'd grown up dirt poor, the daughter of two janitors who favored being addressed as environmental engineers. She had two older sisters who were gold diggers, which explained why Meredith was one herself. Unfortunately, her sisters hadn't landed a wealthy man. Meredith seduced Henry one night while he was too drunk to know better. They had a whirlwind romance and were forced to marry after Meredith became pregnant. Henry had long recovered from the fact that Meredith had trapped him by lying and saying she was on the pill. After it was all over, said and done, he found out that she'd never taken a birth control pill, rather less had a prescription for one in her entire life. Henry wasn't rich by anyone's standards, but compared to Meredith's family, he was Donald Trump. "Whatever, Meredith," Henry said. "That's not what I want to talk to you about anyway." Meredith put the turkey in the sink and ran hot water over it to begin thawing it out for dinner the next day. "Well, we have to talk while I'm cooking. It's getting late and I still have to rinse my greens, get them on, cut up the potatoes for my salad tomorrow, and bake a couple of pumpkin pies." "Good grief, you act like we're feeding an army." Meredith snickered. "Hell, Henry, you know how my family eats." Henry cleared his throat and pulled his chair up closer to the table so he could rest his elbows. "Meredith, we need to have a serious talk about Jean-Quinette." Meredith paused and stood still before facing him, leaning her hips against the sink. "What about her?" "We can't keep ignoring her behavior. All these years we've made excuses for her actions, but something has to be done immediately before it gets out of hand. I don't even know what I'm saying. Things have already gotten out of hand, and you're not helping matters any." Meredith said, "Jean-Quinette's just fine. She's the typical teenage girl. Her hormones are raging, and she's going through major changes." Henry shook his head. He stood up and grabbed Meredith by the shoulders. "Jean-Quinette's anything but typical, Meredith. You and I both know it." Meredith yanked herself free in anger. "I refuse to stand here and listen to this nonsense." Henry got a glass out of the cabinet, turned on the faucet, and filled it with cool water. He took a sip and contemplated his next move. "Meredith, I wanted to believe Jean-Quinette was normal just as much as you. Hell, even more. But we've got to get her some help." "Help? What kind of help?" "She needs to see a specialist. A psychiatrist." "You've lost your damn mind," Meredith said. "Jean-Quinette isn't crazy. You are." "Now, Meredith, I'm not saying the girl is crazy. I'm saying at the very least she's extremely confused." Henry started pacing the floor. "There's just something that doesn't sit right about all of this. The only thing Jean-Quinette needs is a decent boyfriend. She's at the age where she should start dating." Meredith turned on the oven and then sat down at the table. "If you really want to do something for Jean-Quinette, spend more time with her. She still has to log another 30 hours of driving with her learner's permit before she can get her license in January. She also needs to improve her computer science grade, and being that you're a programmer, I would think you could help her out with that." Henry didn't appreciate the sarcasm lingering in Meredith's voice. "This isn't about driving or some damn computer. This is about doing something before Jean-Quinette seriously hurts herself or someone else." "Where is this all coming from?" Meredith asked apprehensively. "Granted, she's had episodes in the past, but nothing lately." Henry lowered his eyes to the floor. "Henry, nothing lately, right?"
"I guess not," he replied. "I just have this gut feeling that this is the calm before the storm."
Meredith got up and touched his hand. "Henry Pierce, you and I have been through hell together over the past 2 decades, and we've always survived. We'll survive this too, whatever it is." Henry hugged Meredith snugly.
"I love both of you so much. I just want us to have a happy family."
"We do have a happy family, Henry."
"You say so, but..."
Meredith pulled away from his embrace and glared at him. "But what?"
"I still plan to call someone on Monday, just to see what they say."
"Someone like who?"
Henry shrugged. "I guess I'll start with the Health and Human Services Department. They should be able to recommend someone."
Meredith rolled her eyes and slammed a pot down on the stove. She didn't say another word. Jean-Quinette tiptoed back upstairs without either of them knowing she'd heard the entire conversation. Chapter 18. Thanksgiving Day, 1994, 3 a.m. Jude had waited until both Henry and Meredith were fast asleep before sneaking out of bed. She threw on a pair of jeans, a t-shirt, and a pair of raggedy sneakers, and then eased her way out of the house into the garage. She winced when she pushed the button for the door to rise. It was a dicey move because there was a noisy vibration. Her room was directly over the garage, and she always heard it but wasn't sure whether it was audible in the master bedroom. She waited for a minute to see if she heard any movement. There was nothing, so she unlocked Henry's Lincoln Town Car and eased behind the wheel. She was elated that he always kept an extra set of keys in the kitchen drawer. It made things so much easier for her. She put the car in reverse without starting the engine and coasted out the driveway onto the street where she turned it over. She grinned as she headed off into the darkness. "I'll fix your ass, but good," she whispered. Jude knew exactly where to go, a strip downtown that was heavily populated with strip clubs and prostitutes lining the sidewalk. She had $200 and some change, Junquenetta's life savings. She hoped it would be enough. 1 p.m. Jude stayed up in the bedroom for most of the morning, pretending Junquenetta was studying computer science. But Jude didn't give a fuck about computer science. She did like going into chat rooms, though, particularly those where people talked about sex and nothing but sex. One such room was called Freaky Black People. It was her personal favorite. She'd had cyber sex with countless men, most of whom thought she was a 24-year-old nurse from Raleigh, North Carolina, instead of a 15-year-old high school student. Stupid idiots, as far as she was concerned. Even Jude was shocked that so many freaks were online Thanksgiving Day. She assumed they all had family plans, but their addiction to chat rooms must have superseded them. Jude was just bored stiff and waiting for the fireworks to initiate later that day. She still had a few hours before the festivities, so she started teasing around with one of the men in the chat room, who had the scream name Slanging Dick. His profile boasted that he could lick a woman's belly button from the inside. Nasty bastard, Jude thought. Just my type of man. Jude had yet to have actual intercourse, but it was only a matter of time as far as she was concerned. Junquenette led such a lackluster life that there wasn't a single boy she spent time around that interested her. The boys at school were all revolting. Plus, they were just that, boys. Jude yearned for a man. A few of the men online had tried to coax her into offline meetings. One of them almost had her, a smooth talker who went by Dream Lover for you. She was all ready to meet up with him until she found out he wanted to rendezvous at a raunchy hotel instead of one of those fancy ones he always talked about doing the nasty with her in. She also found out, from another woman in the chat room who actually met with him and had sex with him offline, that he had the dick of an 8-year-old. She wasn't sure if bomb-ass Putty was lying or not, but she wasn't taking any chances or wasting her time. Besides, Bomb also informed her that Dream looked nothing like the photo he was emailing to women in the room. She said the photo must have been more than a decade old, and that he was really closer to 40 instead of the 30-year-old he claimed to be. Jude, whose screen name was Hot Commodity, sent Slanging Dick an invitation to a private chat so she could cyber him. What the hell, she thought. Practice makes perfect, even if the practice isn't real. They entered a private room, and it was on. Hot Commodity. What's up, love? Slanging Dick. Nothing much. Just waiting to see what you're working with. Do you cyber much? Hot Commodity. A little here, a little there, but nothing beats the real thing. Slanging Dick. Amen to that. Cyber sex is cool, though. At least it's safer. Hot Commodity. Yeah, it's safer than phone sex. Slanging Dick. Phone sex? Hot Commodity. Yeah, you should always wear a condom when you have phone sex so you don't catch hearing aids. Slanging Dick. LOL. You're a wild girl. Hot Commodity. So your profile said you can lick a woman's belly button from the inside. Slanging Dick. All night long, and my dick so long you can feel it in your throat. Hot Commodity. Damn, how big is it? Slanging Dick. How big do you want it to be? Hot Commodity. Big enough to satisfy me in all three holes. Slanging Dick. Damn. So you like it in the ass, huh? Hot Commodity. Oh, yeah. I love it in the ass. In fact,
Let me show you my ass right now. I'm lying here naked on top of my bed, fingering myself as you come into the room. Slanging dick.
Yeah, I can see you.
Describe yourself. Hot commodity. I'm 5'10", caramel. I have long flowing dark hair and large bedroom eyes, and a body that screams, come fuck me. Slanging dick. Oh my. Hot commodity. Describe yourself to me. Slanging dick. I'm 6'8", light-skinned, bow-legged, and I wear my hair low. I'm clean-shaven, and I have a big-ass dick. Hot commodity. Yummy. I just love tall men. Let me turn over and prop my ass up on a pillow so you can get a better look at it. Can you see my anus now? Slanging dick. Yeah, I see it. Lick your finger and run it up and down your crack. Get that ass ripe for me. Hot commodity. I'm licking my finger now. Now I'm running it up and down the middle of my ass. Oh, my bad. I accidentally slipped it in. It feels so good, but your dick would feel better. Slanging dick. Well, get ready for it, because here it comes. Hot commodity. Yeah, that's it, baby. Slide it right up in there, slowly, so I can get used to it. Slanging dick. I'm pushing my dick into your ass, inch by motherfucking inch. How does that feel? Hot commodity. Awesome. Give it all to me. Fuck it. I can't wait anymore. Slanging dick. I'm shoving it all the way in. Take this shit. Raw dog, you whore. Hot commodity. I like it when a man talks dirty to me. Talk dirty to me some more. Slanging dick. Okay, bitch. Take all this dick up in that black hole of yours. Hot commodity. Yeah, you're ripping it up now. I can feel your balls slapping up against the back of my thighs. Slanging dick. Ooh, I'm yanking your head back by your hair, forcing your ass further onto my dick. Take this pain, bitch. Hot commodity. I'm fingering myself and feeding my pussy to you. How do I taste? Slanging dick. Like chicken. Hot commodity. Come for me, baby. Slanging dick. I'm not ready to come yet. I'm yanking my dick out your ass and ramming it into your pussy. I'm gonna fuck you doggy style. Hot commodity. That's my fave. Slanging dick. Yeah, mine too. Work this dick over, whore. Hot commodity. Mamacita's working it, boo. Slanging dick. I want you to come all over this dick. Hot commodity. Grab my ass cheeks and dig your nails into them. Slanging dick. Oh, yeah? How's that? Hot commodity. That's it, Poppy. I'm coming already. I can feel it trickling down the sides of my thighs onto the sheets. Slanging dick. I'm fingering your ass. Does that make it better for you? Hot commodity. Yeah, but stick three fingers inside me instead of one. Slanging dick. I want to taste you, bitch. Hot commodity. Only if I can taste you, too. Slanging dick. I'm pulling my dick out your pussy and laying down on the bed. Climb on my face. Lay that sweet pussy right on my hungry mouth. Hot commodity. I'm lowering myself onto you. My pussy's so sticky with cum. Slanging dick. You 69ing? Hot commodity. Absolutely. I'm taking your dick into my mouth at the same time I'm sitting on your face. Slanging dick. Your pussy is so sweet. Hot commodity. I'm licking my pussy juice off your dick. You're right, it is sweet. Slanging dick. Damn skippy. Hot commodity. I deep throat you and feel you coming in my mouth. Slanging dick. Is it good to you, baby? Hot commodity. The best. I come in your mouth and then I climb off your face. Slanging dick. Oh, shit! Oh, that was some bomb pussy. Hot commodity. I have to go now. Thanks for the dick, boo. Kisses all over your body. 4 p.m. The house was packed with relatives, all of whom Jude hated. She put on a plaid wool skirt and long-sleeved sweater, just the variety of boring outfit Jonquinette would have selected. Meredith was in her element, showing off for her family and pretending like she was the shit. When she asked Jonquinette to help her set the table, Jude plastered on a bogus smile and complied. She wanted to stay downstairs because she didn't want to jeopardize missing the action once the doorbell rang. By 4:30, when they all actually sat down to eat, Jude was getting edgy. The bitch was late. Benjamin, Junk Wynette's 12-year-old cousin, was making Jude queasy by chewing with his mouth open. Jude wanted to reach across the table and slap him. Instead, she just grinned at him and redirected her eyes elsewhere. When he let out a loud belch, Jude cleared her throat. That sorry motherfucker has no home training whatsoever, she thought. Then again, she shouldn't have been surprised considering his mother, Meredith's sister Elaine, had no home training her damn self. By 5, Jude was absolutely enraged. She was ready to go scour the streets for the bitch and strangle her with her bare hands. At 5:15, the doorbell finally rang. Jude jumped up and said, "I'll get it. You all finish your dessert." Meredith called after her as she headed out into the foyer. "I wonder who..."